Let not your heart be troubled. You are listening to the Sean Hannity Radio Show podcast. Hey, with optimism once again on the rise in America, the working people of this country are more important than ever. Well, now they have a podcast that celebrates them and tells their stories. On the Job, From Hired to Retired. Well, it's a new podcast from our friends at Express Employment Professionals that digs into the lives of men and women at work and explores their journeys as they fight to make the American dream a reality. On the Job takes the listener through the ups and downs of making a living in America. Now check out the new podcast, On the Job, From Hired to Retired, on iHeartRadio, iTunes, or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. Or just go to expresspros.com/podcast for more information. All right, here we are on a Monday, sending out my last text of the day. Anyway, glad you're with us. Write down our toll-free telephone number, 800-941-SEAN. You want to be a part of this extravaganza. I think, and I've been saying that I think one of the greatest threats, a real clear present danger. By the way, do you know that Alex Jones and I have used the same term? And if you listen to this program, you know I've used it many, many times. It's a well-known phrase. It's used by almost everybody. And clear and present danger was a Tom Clancy. Wasn't that a novel by Tom Clancy that they turned into a movie, I think, too, right? And it's a term that everybody uses. That, and we were talking about the same topic there. After all, we must be colluding. There must be some collusion among the right wing. To Alex Jones's credit, he seemed to have laughed it off when it was suggested that somehow we must, you know, that we couldn't have thought of those words independently of each other. It's, you know, I tell you, when they want to take you out and they hate you on the left, they'll just do they'll stop at nothing. It's insane. We've got a lot on the program today. The great one, Mark Levin. One of the things that I always love about Mark's books, Mark takes us back to basics. Mark takes us back to framers, founders, fundamental constitutional issues, and even beyond that, he takes us to those that inspired the framers, the founders, our constitutional foundations. And he's done it again. I mean, he's written now a series of these books that, and each one uniquely different, that takes us on a journey towards understanding this democratic republic we live in. And it's something that I think he's uniquely qualified for. This is his love, his deep passion. As many of you know, he's one of my closest friends. And, you know, I go to his house when he's writing these books, and you go in to the room where he writes it is, you know, sort of, I think it's next to the dining room, next to the living room, and it's just outside the kitchen, and it's a huge room in his house, and you can't even step in that room. I don't know how he actually makes it through the clutter that he builds. And what he does, which is really unique, and he spends 18 months or 2 years writing each book, and it's just way too, I hate books. For me, it's just way too painful. The process is painful. The researching is painful. The book tours are, not that I don't love meeting people, but they become painful over time. It's selling it and mentioning it is painful. And everyone likes to write books. I just, for me, doing radio and TV, and those of you that know, I have, you know, expanded my horizons, this foray into this movie that we're going to be releasing after the summer sometime. We haven't picked the date yet. And I'm very proud of the project that we're involved in, and it's called Let There Be Light. And it stars Kevin Sorbo and his wife, Sam. And I think it's so applicable to where we are as a society today. And I wanted to do this because of the message in the movie. And my belief, and I've expressed this many times as a guy that's on radio and a guy that's on TV, that one of the most powerful forms of communication, you know, are movies. They just have this ability to touch people deeply. Music touches people deeply, and there's a huge musical component that I haven't even mentioned about the movie that'll come out at some point. But, you know, for some people, this is what they do. I have a really cool guy that works at The American Thinker recently asked me about what I thought about Joe Pyne, and apparently they had found lost 100 shows of Joe Pyne. And, you know, he's often referred to as like the original shock jock, the original confrontational host. A guy that was a pioneer for what came later, which would be Stern and Imus and who else? Bob Grant. hey, let's be heard, or Rush or me or Mark or any of us in talk radio, Laura, whoever happens to be. And in many ways, these guys did, you know, they did forge a path. But everybody was different. I mean, Barry Farber forged his path. And as a guy that spoke, you know, 50 languages and had probably the brightest, keenest intellect, knowledge of history that I've ever known in my life, and had traveled abroad, and his expertise, this guy knew and understood the dangers of statism, communism, and expressed it in his own way. And it, and I'd stay up late at night listening to Barry Farber. And Joe Pyne would have his moments where he's, you know, gargle with razor blades. You know, the great one. Let me tell you, get off my phone, you big creep. Whatever he happened to say. Or, hey, you know something? Get off my phone, you creep. You know, or Bob Graham. But all of us, if you really look at it, that are in the opinionated talk business, we're all our own individuals here. We all bring something interesting to the table. You know, I've always thought Mark's constitutional foundation, was something unique that he brought to the table, because it's where his passion is. When you have a passion for anything, you're gonna do it that much better because it's not work. I thought Rush had always has this creative genius, and whenever I'd listen to Rush, I'd hear a take, a twist, an analysis that, with an irreverence and a wicked sense of humor that I wouldn't hear from anybody else. And look at the phenomenon that he created. When I listen to Barry Farber, I learn about things that Albania that I never thought I'd even care about, but he had a way of engaging. When I listen to some liberals, Barry Gray at the time was also credited, like Joe Pyne, as one of the pioneers that put interactive talk on the air. These guys are all amazing, all unique, all special. I'll let you decide whatever I bring to the table, but I think we bring hard-hitting commentary, research, the best guests, and the news of the day, and frankly, news you're not getting from the mainstream media, whether it be vetting Obama, or whether it be Obama's failed record, or whether it be discussing the deep state, or Hillary Clinton's felonies, or Loretta Lynch's obstruction, or being a little different on Richard Jewell and George Zimmerman and Ferguson, Missouri, and hands up, don't shoot, and saying very early on it's not likely that it had happened and being proven right, or Freddie Gray running in the morning in Baltimore and the ensuing issues that evolved for all of this, or the Duke lacrosse case. You know, these are all issues where we stand out, where we've been proven right and the media has been proven wrong. And I'm not that we ever expect credit. Not only do we not get credit, we get the distinction, all of us, of being monitored every day by these people that want to silence conservative voices. You know, Neil Bortz with his libertarian, you know, perspective on things, all, you know, before he retired, a friend of mine still, you know, he had his own take on issues. He and I would go out to dinner and we'd argue bitterly about certain minuscule differences, not major. You know, who would have ever thought the Fair Tax book, you know, it would be a number one New York Times bestseller. Every one of Mark Levin's books have been number one New York Times bestsellers. And, you know, but it's really, I think that all of us combined, and I say this humbly, all of us combined are adding news and information and a take on things that you just can't get anywhere else. And, you know, for me, it's never been a zero-sum game. There are other people in our industry that are just wackadoodle insane, and for them it's either me or nothing, and meaning they think they're the best and everybody else is horrible. And I can tell you some of the great local hosts in this country, many of whom happen to be friends of mine that I have great admiration for, that are enormously talented, that work, you know, extraordinarily hard. I mean, I think Lars Larson has done 7-hour radio programs for years, or my buddy Joe Pags, or any of these guys. Larry O'Connor's a good guy. I saw him recently at Talkers. All of these people are good people, care about their country. They all have their own unique special talent set. And they all, I think, we contribute collectively in our own way to advancing narratives that you're not getting anywhere else. The mainstream media in this country is dead. It is bankrupt and it is corrupt, and dangerously so. You know, I'll give you an example. You got the latest on CNN is just despicable. Another correction that they've had to make, and the New York Times corrections, and the Washington Post corrections, and NBC corrections, and they're all exposed as having colluded with Hillary Clinton. You know, I mean, and how many times can they write articles and be proven wrong about the Trump administration because they've got this agenda. How did they have any trust after they were exposed by Julian Assange and WikiLeaks as having colluded with Hillary? Just like I can't believe from my own perspective how the issue of Hillary Clinton, you know, literally getting away with clear felonies. I don't even know how that happened. How has it happened when the law is clear, gross negligence, you know, and obviously you can't mismanage classified, top secret or special access program. How did she ever get away with any of that? You know, how do we have deep state intelligence people that literally are leaking against this president selectively to hurt him on a daily basis, colluding with the Washington Post, New York Times and other news outlets? By the way, everyone's fixated on how horrible Trump-Russia collusion, which there's no evidence for, never has been. And yet Obama never got criticized at all, and he tried to influence the elections in Israel and unseat the prime minister of Israel, Prime Minister Netanyahu. I'd like to see what evidence they have of Trump-Russian collusion, because we know that Obama colluded to defeat one of our closest allies and influence, use American influence there. You know, how is it possible that, you know, Hillary Clinton is out there, that she puts an illegal server in a mom and pop shop bathroom closet, and then she destroyed, these are all felonies, top secret classified special access program information, and nothing happened? Or that she colludes, signs off on 20% of the foundational materials for nuclear weapons, and it all goes to Vladimir Putin, and the people involved in the deal are kicking back millions to the Clinton Foundation, and her husband doubles his speaking fees. You know, I mean, and I actually said this to somebody on Twitter the other day. I was like, all right, what's collusion? Were there people within the Trump campaign that maybe thought that Russia had evidence that Hillary Clinton violated the law, committed felonies, that Hillary Clinton colluded to defeat Bernie Sanders, that they had evidence of who she really is? And maybe somebody in the Trump campaign said, I hope you get that information out. That'd be good for the American people to learn the truth. I said, what's the crime there? How is that collusion? Ask somebody to tell the truth, especially somebody that was covering up, lying, and somebody that we now know destroyed evidence, emails, and attempted to. Didn't fully get there, but she attempted to. You know, or you want to talk about collusion, how about the DNC rigging the primary against Bernie Sanders? Why isn't Bernie more angry about that? By the way, I think the tweet that got the most retweets this weekend was to Rob Reiner, who says, Fox News says Donald Trump colluding with the enemy is not a crime. The fight to save democracy is now an all-out war. U.S. stay strong. And I wrote him, you're really a meathead dumbass. These people are beyond dumb to me. Beyond. All right, I got a lot to get to here today. Yeah, CNN leaked a memo. Top executive to review all Russia stories after very fake news retraction. How many retractions have they had over there at the Clinton News Network? How were they never held accountable for what they did? Now, we've got a lot of news on the Russia front. Here's what I want to tell you when we get back. Everything I've been telling you is upside down. Black is white. White is black. North is south. South is north. East is west. West is east. Now, because the Democrats have pushed everything so hard, it's all boomeranging back on Hillary, on Loretta Lynch, on Comey, on Mueller, on the deep state. And there's so much to share with you. The tables are turning. All right, as we roll, Sean Hannity Show, glad you're with us. You know, this is pretty interesting. The president on Saturday hammering the Obama administration. Why? Because of their role with Russia and how Russia and claims, yeah, Russia interfered. And guess what? Obama did nothing. Referring to what came out on Friday, late Friday, that the president was aware as early as August of 2016, the U.S. intelligence indicating that the Russian president had direct involvement in a cyber campaign to disrupt and discredit the U.S. presidential race, which, by the way, this was not the first time. And as testimony has gone forward from, frankly, deep state leakers, as far as I'm concerned, that it's not going to be the last time. Just like Obama went out and tried to actively unseat a sitting prime minister, one of our closest allies, Israel. And, you know, it's pretty amazing. The DHS released a statement claiming the Russian government directed the recent compromisers of emails from U.S. persons, institutions. And by the way, Obama held back. Well, why? Because he expected a, you know, contaminating the expected Clinton triumph. Oh, so Obama did it for political reasons. He didn't do what was in the best national security interest of the United States. You know, one reason Obama held back was fear of potentially contaminating the expected Hillary Clinton landslide. And it was only last December that it was reported the administration's thinking about whether to go public was influenced by their belief in the White House of Obama that Hillary Clinton would be the president. And the and Donald Trump's recent tweets about the second time in recent days, you know, he used the Twitter platform to raise questions why the DNC turned down the FBI's request to inspect their hacked servers, just like they denied the DHS access, because they would prove collusion between Clinton and the DNC to rig the election, the primary against Bernie. And then it's, you know, and the DNC did, you know, in that sense, and in his testimony, the FBI director confirmed, yeah, multiple requests at different levels to review the DNC's hacked servers. And then the real reason that Obama did nothing, because he wanted Hillary to win. He didn't want to rock the boat in any way. Oh, we got a whole new boomerang effect as it relates to corruption here. All right, 25 till the top of the hour. Linda just sent me something. There's no way that this is possible. She said in the first hour of Joy Reid's MSNBC show, was it this morning?
It was Saturday morning.
I don't ever watch any of these shows.
But why not, Sean?
Because I would rather
get poked in the eye with a knife stick.
Yeah, that would work. Anyway, apparently mentioned the word Russia or Russian 56 times.
So funny. Can you imagine having like a Bloody Mary drinking game on a Saturday morning?
Oh, my God.
We'd never get to noon.
What time is her show on?
I have no idea.
Well, then how do you know that this is true?
Well, it says morning. A.M. Joy. Get it? A.M.
No, okay. Where did you get the information from, I'm asking?
Well, first it was on Free Republic.
You're supposed to say first of all.
First of all, it was on Free Republic as well as a few other conservative sites. And then our Crackerjack Hannity.com team put it on Hannity.com so all of our viewers and listeners can check it out.
Well, that's really funny.
So funny.
That's all right. Now, I never knew Rachel Maddow, and everyone's saying to me, how did you not know? I'm like,
I think we should have a word. Should it be Lynch investigation? Lynch investigation?
How about Clinton investigation?
Clinton investigation?
Clinton investigation. Yeah, exactly.
Bernie Sanders investigation?
Yeah, exactly. Bernie Sanders, and by the way, soon to be James Comey investigation.
Barack Obama investigation.
Barack Obama should be put under oath, 100%. I mean, you think about this. Now that Obama held back, knew in August of 2016, a potential Russian influence in our election, but purposely didn't do anything because he thought it might potentially contaminate Hillary's expected, anticipated victory. Well, that's everything that we need to know. Now, there's more to this. Paul Sperry, who's a great writer, and we often see him in the New York Post, he reports that the Senate now has to probe the partisan nature, which, by the way, it goes against the New York Times narrative, as if anybody trusts the New York Times anymore, that this opposition research group, which produced the dossier, which talked about Trump in a Ritz-Carlton in Moscow many years ago, with two hookers or three hookers urinating in his bed. Now, apparently, they're probing the partisan nature of this. Now, this D.C. opposition research firm, which produced the dossier on then-candidate Trump, alleging that he is a secret agent of Putin, you know, recruited via blackmail with videotape of Trump urinating with Russian prostitutes. I mean, that's how the whole story. But anyway, the firm that was commissioned, that commissioned the dubious intelligence dossier, with false information in it, is now stonewalling congressional investigators that are trying to learn more about their connections to apparently the Democratic Party. And the Senate Judiciary Committee earlier this month threatened to subpoena the firm, Fusion GPS, after it refused to answer any questions, provide any records to the panel identifying who financed this error-ridden dossier, which was circulated during the election and has sparked a lot of this Russia scandal now engulfing the Trump administration, even though it is now moving on, you know, elsewhere. It's unbelievable to me. Hang on one second. There we go. And so, you know, and here's another question that nobody even asked in this piece. Why is it that James Comey tried to hire this former MI6 guy that came up with all the phony information? And by the way, what is the company hiding from? And if we're going to look at Obama knowing since August of 2016, okay, and not saying anything about Russian influence in the election, which, by the way, nobody doubts, just like he tried to influence the Israeli elections. And frankly, China probably did, too. And the Iranians probably tried to do it, too. And the North Koreans probably tried to do it, too. And as testimony has been given, it's not just the Russians, but a lot of enemies trying to influence our country. And one of my biggest complaints with everyone that attacks Julian Assange and any of these people that are capable of easily hacking into our system is, well, with all due respect, he did it when he was 16 years old, and you guys had all these decades to fix it, and you haven't done a darn thing. And at some point, it becomes America's problem, America's mistake, that we allow this vulnerability to continue. I'm sorry, at some point, he's 45 years old. You know, we were first hacked into when he was 16. For crying out loud, you better realize you failed the American people. This is your failure. It's the government's failure. Anyway, so when is Obama going to testify? When is this company going to testify? When are they going to bring this MI6 guy in that apparently James Comey wanted to pay and hire? Do we know for sure if whether he already gave that guy money or not? Because that was a big issue before. Now, Fusion GPS was on the payroll of an unidentified Democratic ally of Hillary Clinton when they hired this long-retired British spy to dig up dirt on Trump. And in 2012, Democrats hired Fusion GPS to uncover dirt on Mitt Romney. And in 2015, Democratic ally Planned Parenthood retained Fusion GPS to investigate a pro-life activist protesting the abortion group. I mean, I can't believe all of the sketchy, secretive, underhanded, just corrupt, the nature of these people. By the way, you know, we now have more conflicts of interest as it relates to Robert Mueller. I won't go through my litany, which I did last week, about Comey and Rosenstein and Mueller and all the people Mueller is hiring, including Hillary Clinton's own attorney who worked on the foundation issue and wanted to keep information from the public and deny Freedom of Information Act requests, which we had every right to see. But anyway, and then the many Obama and Clinton donors that Mueller has hired. But you know what? And how we've had investigative creep that goes from Russia Trump. Well, that's dead. Now let's move on to Jared Kushner's finances. And then let's also move on to obstruction of justice. Yeah, Rosenstein appoints Mueller for obstruction of justice because Comey was fired. Comey admitted that Trump had the right to fire him for any reason. And everybody else recognizes, Alan Dershowitz recognizes it. And a sitting president cannot be guilty of obstruction. And don't forget, the power of the pardon is very absolute and powerful for the president. You know, but then it goes on in that Mueller's legal team, you know, how is it possible that we now have a size, there was an article of the entire U.S. Attorney's Office for the state of Rhode Island being hired? You've got to be kidding me here. To investigate what? And public accounts by friends of James Comey, you know, were leaked apparently when he was the FBI director. If that's true, he committed perjury because he said he never leaked before. And he's saying he only leaked after. Now, this has to do with this guy who's on Twitter, you know, that James Comey may have misled senators May 3rd when he testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee that he'd never been an anonymous source in a news report related to the Russia investigation. But that time he had already apparently, maybe, perhaps leaked private conversations he had with the president to his friend Benjamin Witz. Now, Witz is this editor in chief and I guess a former editorial writer for The Washington Post. And he wrote a piece on May 18th, 9 days after Comey was fired, that the former FBI director had shared those conversations after the previous few months. He wrote, "Comey never told me the details of the dinner meeting. I don't think I ever knew that there had been a meeting over dinner until I learned it from the Time story. But he did tell me in general terms early on that Trump had asked for loyalty and Comey had promised him only honesty. And he also told me Trump was perceptively uncomfortable with that answer. Well, this guy also wrote that he had lunch with Comey on March 27th and they discussed a phone call that Trump had made to him earlier in the day. Well, how is any of this not leaking? And Witz denied those conversations were leaked, just conversations between friends. Oh, really? A friend who apparently likes to go out there and tell every little detail about what they are doing? Now, that would be, in my book, a leak. There are finally now Republican lawmakers saying what I've been saying. And you have three Republican House Oversight Committee members calling for an investigation into former FBI Director Comey and his best buddy, his BFF, Robert Mueller, for acting in a partisan matter, applying a double standard when it comes to the Trump and Obama administrations. Jim Jordan, Mark Meadows, and Jody Heiss have all said Comey has misled the American people when he agreed to then-Attorney General Lynch's request to call this investigation a matter. He did nothing about the tarmac meeting except usurp the power of the Attorney General, which he had no authority to do. And he never recused himself. I mean, we have a procedure if an attorney general needs to recuse herself. And then, of course, we were confronted with the Sarah Carter, John Solomon piece that Comey had information that perhaps Loretta Lynch, the attorney general, had put the kibosh, regardless of any evidence presented, on any possible indictment of Hillary. Well, that would be obstruction of justice in this country. That's why the investigation into Loretta Lynch is now important. That's why all of these things I've been telling you are so important. And this is why I keep saying we're now getting to the point that, you know, not only did Trump have a major win, by the way, in the Supreme Court today, reinstating the very key parts of extreme vetting and his travel ban, so much for judge shopping in the Ninth Circuit. And the president wrote, very grateful, 9-0 decision from the Supreme Court. Let's keep America safe. Add to the 80 percentile overrule that now is the record of the Ninth Circuit. But, you know, everything that Democrats and the media have been telling you about Russia and election interference and collusion and conspiracy theories and obstruction of justice and criminal activity is now flipped. We now have what we're calling the Hannity boomerang. And I've been predicting that this is going to happen. All the months of floating conspiracy theories, unfounded accusations. Well, it's actually now what I have said. Up is down, down is up, black is white is black, north is south, east is west. In other words, the real colluders, the real obstructors, those who have been claiming collusion, you know, are now the ones we're finding out that are guilty of these things. And they've just tried to score cheap political points by advancing and pushing and pushing and pushing and lying and lying and lying. It's inevitable that these questions were eventually going to be asked by other people in the media besides me. The real fault for Russia's election interference now falls at the feet of Obama. Real crimes were actually now committed by Hillary. The statute of limitations have not passed, and she needs to be indicted. And frankly, there's so much evidence that it's incontrovertible that she committed felonies. And if you commit felonies, I commit felonies, we go to jail. And we also learned the real conspiracy, if you want a Russia-America conspiracy theory, well, that would be the Uranium One deal, her signing off on 20% of the foundational material for nuclear weapons to Putin. Anyway, Obama apparently knew exactly what was going on, but didn't want to do a damn thing for one reason. It's because he didn't want to interfere with Hillary's inevitable win for the election. You got a ranking Democrat on the House Intel Committee, Adam Schiff. You know, he actually says the American people needed to know. I don't think it's enough to tell them after the election, but rather given the seriousness of this, the administration needed to call out Russia earlier. They didn't do it because they wanted Hillary to win. And Democrats claiming Russian interference. We knew in August. Now we find out. So why did Obama stay silent? When are we going to put Obama under oath? And Obama didn't do a thing because he thought Hillary had it in the bag. So the only reason the Russian interference story is a big deal is only because Donald Trump won and that they had a chance to stop it. They had a chance to get involved early and they didn't do it for politics. Obama, we need to know what Obama knew when he knew it. He needs to testify. He needs to clear things up. And frankly, we need to find out if actual crimes were committed. And if he really cared about Russia collusion, he would have done something about it. Hillary breaks the law. We know what Loretta Lynch has done. And we also know the conflicts of interest and borderline absolute need for investigation of James Comey. You know, all of this is pivotal. And basically everything that we have been on top of is now coming true before your eyes. And that the real conspiracy theorists are at the New York Times, Washington Post, NBC, CNN, and the rest of the mainstream media, ABC, CBS, NBC. You know, the Lynch scandal is getting worse every day. Even Adam Schiff said, you know, the same thing this weekend. She needs to testify. You know, we need Comey and this unholy alliance and this, you know, frankly, it's bordering on nepotism, for crying out loud, with him and Mueller. And why is Mueller stacking the deck with all Democrats that donated to Obama, Clinton, and even hiring Clinton's own lawyer? And why is he having investigative creep moving on to 50 other issues? And why is that ever going to be allowed? And what about the leaking of Comey? You know, I got to tell you, why this dossier, and who paid for the dossier? You know, why was Comey going to pay this guy that gave phony information about hookers and Trump at a Ritz-Carlton in Moscow? It's all unbelievable to me. Tom, quick break. Right back. We'll continue. You know, I've got so much on our plate today. The great one, Mark Levin. We've got to do this deeper dive into not only our founders, our framers, our Constitution. And as I said, a silent coup is going on in this country. And everything that we fought for, not only in November, but so many have sacrificed for us and our liberty and our freedom and our way of life is threatened in terms of those that want bigger state government intrusion into your life every day for their own power, not necessarily to help us, but also those that inspired them. And we'll get to that now. Tomorrow on this program, I want to tell you one thing we're going to do. I don't want these guys on an August recess. How about staying and working and doing their job because they're so freaking slow and have no urgency? We need to keep them here, and we're going to have a list and check it twice starting tomorrow. All right, hour two, Sean Hannity Show. Write down our toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of this extravaganza. It's 800-941-SEAN if you want to join us. You know, there are many, many, many great books written by bright conservatives. Most of them have to do with what's going on today. You know, like, for example, you know, I just can't even begin to name them all. And very few are written about America's foundational roots, fundamental understanding of our Constitution, our framers, our founders. And one of my best friends in the entire world is the great one, Mark Levin, and he has really taken it upon himself to bring us deeper into the understanding of how it is that this country was founded, what our true beliefs are, where the rule of law is, how far we have come, but yet how far removed we are from the original intention of these framers and founders and our Constitution. And he started out with Liberty and Tyranny, and it became a huge, massive, nationwide bestseller. And he followed it up with Ameritopia. And he's followed that up with the Liberty Amendments. And he's also written books like Men in Black and Rescuing Sprite about, you know, losing one of his best friends, his dogs, which really resonated with so many of us that love dogs. But this is where an area that he has carved out, and this is where his real passion is. And I've been to Mark's house as he's actually writing these books, and he's got one room of his entire home that you cannot even walk through because there are papers and books literally sky high, and to navigate through that room is a near impossibility. Because what he does, and I think this is the brilliance behind these books and the real reason for their success, is he is able to absorb all of that information, condense it, and put it out in a way that people like us that are so busy that don't have the time to do the deep dive that he is doing into these matters, you know, to take it to its fundamental roots and give it to us that is informative, educational, enlightening, eye-opening. And that's the brilliance of Mark. That's the brilliance of what he's been able to do and why the series of books that he's written are, I think, so imperative. And I have no doubt that scholars are going to look back on these books and the series of books as somebody that actually understood the great peril we were facing in this moment. Now, Mark's latest book is out today. It's on Amazon.com. It's in bookstores everywhere. Hannity.com is called Rediscovering Americanism and the Tyranny of Progressivism. Is that a pretty... Listen, am I describing fairly accurately what it's like when you write your books at home?
Well, that is really kind of you. Oh, yes, and it's all-consuming. You know, it takes me...
No, what? You're gone. No, let me say it another way. You're gone in another world. Mark, what are you doing? I'm busy. I'm writing. I'm
That's
busy.
True.
I'm researching. You know. How are you, my brother? Good
to
have you.
I'm great, and thanks for having me. You know, it takes me 16, 18 months to write a book. I can't pop out 3-4 books a year. I pop out one maybe every 2 years. And this book, Sean, is probably my best, and it's the battle between two forces, an enlightened force that really believes in what's in the Declaration of Independence and the counter-revolutionary force that we're living in today that's actually been devouring this society for 120 years. And what I try to do is explain, get back to basics, not at the surface level, as you know, you've read it, but deep dive in this, and that's why I call it Rediscovering Americanism. What does it mean, Americanism? What do we mean by liberty and unalienable rights and individualism? It's older than the founders. And why do they embrace it? And why was it so important? On the other hand, why was the Declaration of Independence eviscerated 120 years ago, attacked, and it still is today, because of the principles that are in there, these principles, why are they hated? And what is this counter-revolutionary force that even today is so all-consuming of our society and our private lives and our businesses and our workplace? What is it? What are their principles? Where does that come from? Who are the philosophers and thinkers who gave us that? And some people might say, oh, great, a debate among elites. Let me tell you something. If you ignore the elites and the academics and the intellectuals, you do so at your own peril. Because these are the people who decide the kind of politics and the kind of society we're going to live in.
Okay, can I just freeze frame here? Because what you're saying is very, very key and important to the understanding of the foundation of your books and your study here. Because this is a lifelong study that you have engaged in. It's your passion in life. And I say that both as a friend and as a fan of the books and the series, is if we don't understand who inspired our framers, our founders, if we don't understand where their thought process is came from and what motivated them and their deep study into the great philosophers that gave us this republic and not understanding where they come from, we're making a fundamental error. Because if we expect America to be salvaged and saved, I think understanding this is the key to all of it.
No, that's absolutely right. And we're the enlightened side. We're the Reformation side. I mean, what you and I and your audience and my audience, what we're carrying forward here is a crucially important idea, the idea of the individual as a human being, not as a collective, the idea that the individual is born with certain God-given rights, got rights that man can't make and man can't take away. Where do these ideas come from? The idea that we have the right to live free. Let me just take this word liberty, and I discuss all this, obviously, in the book. The progressives, you know, I call them utopian status, but for purposes of this book, so I don't confuse people, they call themselves progressives. I hate that name because they're not progressive. They are what they are. But that said, just look at the word liberty. You know, it's come down to this phrase, negative liberty and positive liberty, and people make the mistake. Oh, I'm for the positive stuff. No. That's not what's meant. Negative liberty is the belief and the principle that you have a circle of liberty around you that the government may not get involved in. And if the government is going to get involved in your life, if there's going to be intervention, then the government only has certain times, ways, and means to get involved in your life, our constitutional system. And if the government interferes in your life, the goal cannot be to dominate you, to dominate the individual. On the other hand, we have those who believe in what they call positive liberty. These are the Bernie Sanders and Barack Obamas and the media and the left. What they mean by positive liberty is not that it's a positive thing. They mean that you and I and our audiences can only experience liberty through liberation by government. So free health care, free schooling, free this, free that. They pervert the word liberty, and they've done so extremely well, very successfully, as they pervert the word individual. The individual. You and I know what an individual is. It's a person, right? Flesh and blood person. And individual rights. Well, they argue, their philosophers argue, their early progressive thinkers argue, and they believe that the individual can only self-realize their full self through the state, through the collective, through uniformity. Think about what Bernie Sanders says and Elizabeth Warren says and Barack Obama. It's all about a centralized, all-powerful government. Whereas for us, it's about the opposite. And so the attack, as people will read my book, you'll see the early progressives viciously attack the Declaration of Independence. They viciously attack the Constitution and separation of powers because of this desire for uniformity, conformity, a state-centralized collective, which they really believe, at least some of them, one day will bring forth this kind of nirvana. And by the way, doesn't that sound a lot like Marxism?
A lot.
And, you know, you talk about 120 years ago, things began to change. I mean, you know, we talk on this program even about a health care bill that no conservative would ever really in principle ever want or need. But then, you know, you've got 100 weak Republicans that never meant repeal and replace.
Yep.
I mean, it is so we've gone so far from what these framers founders ever intended. Why don't you go back to that 120 year mark and walk us through what happened?
Well, we had the Industrial Revolution, and the Industrial Revolution was a magnificent revolution that created our so-called middle class. That phrase comes from Marx, but I'll play along. Because remember, the founders didn't view us as classes and so forth. People did what people did, and they weren't concerned about classes. The Industrial Revolution has been attacked relentlessly, even today with so-called global warming, climate change, and the degrowth movement, and so forth and so on. I really want folks to look around and think a second. Despite what comes across TV about how horrible the rich are and this are and that are, we live better today. I don't care where in the economic stratum you are than kings and queens did 200 years ago. You can get up at 2 in the morning and go to your corner 7-Eleven and purchase virtually anything you want. You can go to a major supermarket or grocery store. There are things there that are inconceivable in most societies from all over the world. Types of meat and fish and this, that, and the other. 14 different types of talcum powder. Accessible to everyone and anyone. You can get on an airplane and fly across the country in 3, 4, 5 hours in air conditioning. And maybe if you like it, you can eat peanuts too. This is beyond belief. And when you take a society that is so successful, not because of central government, not because of progressivism, not because of redistribution of wealth, but because of the principles that we were founded on. People need to appreciate this fact, and we have got to take our language back. We've got to engage. We have got to tell people, young people, all people, you are not going to succeed through centralized government. By the way, who are these experts in centralized government? Why do we think the government is so noble? Why do we think they're going to redistribute wealth so properly? Why do they think they can manage a complex society? The progressives argue that experts, professionals, can better manage society than anybody else. Who are these experts?
Stay right there. Great one. Mark Levin is with us. It's now the latest in a series, and if you haven't read the earlier books, you can still read this. It stands independent of the other three, but it's really important. These are really now becoming a series of must-read books if America's ever going to get back to its founding principles. And Mark Levin is with us, his new book, Rediscovering Americanism and the Tyranny of Progressivism, and Amazon.com, Hannity.com, bookstores everywhere. And we'll take a break. We'll come back. Mark is going to be with us for the hour, 800-941-SEAN. You want to be a part of the program. And he's also agreed to be with us on Hannity tonight, a rare Mark Levin appearance, which we always love. And we get him out of his bunker and out of his own studio. And we'll take a break. We'll come back. More with the great one, Mark Levin. It's the Sean Hannity Show. All right, as we continue, the great one, Mark Levin, is with us. His brand new book, it's part of an ongoing series. It's Rediscovering Americanism and the Tyranny of Progressivism. You know, I didn't want to stop your thought process here, but our framers, our founders, we kept it right for a long time. But now we've evolved into, let's see, government health care, soon government daycare, free college. I guess there'll be, what, we have government housing, and it all goes against what our framers and founders envisioned.
And that's because, quite frankly, so far the progressives have succeeded. We're in a post-constitutional period. That's where we are. And by the way, it infects the courts, it infects Congress, it infects the executive branch. You don't even hear Republicans, very few conservatives, talk about these things anymore. They just give up, and they operate within the construct that the progressive has created. And I just wanted to remind people about this massive administrative state, this fourth branch of government that's not even in the Constitution, which is undermining this president, but under liberal presidents passes laws and pushes his agenda regardless of what Congress thinks. But I want you to think about this massive administrative state. It's built on this notion, progressive notion of expertise and professionalism, where the country keeps changing, events keep changing, we need to keep modernizing. What makes them experts? I want to just go through this briefly. Training, experience, college degrees. What are the civil service and public sector unions and seniority and affirmative action? That has nothing to do with expertise. And how do they make their decisions? From where do they get their information? How do they know what's best and fair and efficient? Which decisions should be made by the federal government? Which decisions should be made by the private sector? Which should be made by the individual? And do these experts consider the popular will, the election of the people, when they make their decisions? This is a joke. It is an effort to make the electoral process less and less relevant and to enshrine and immunize the progressive agenda from the will of the people. And the left, people like Bernie Sanders and so forth, they're always talking about the people, the general interests of the people in this class and that class. And yet what's very interesting, even though they claim that their view is one of popular sovereignty, that's the disguise. Because what they support, like Obamacare, Obamacare is the opposite of popular sovereignty. Going back to this word freedom, they have perverted the word freedom to mean government action, to mean government coercion. That's not freedom. That's tyranny. And we got to get the language back. Now, conversely, we, the people, our founders, and the Declaration of Independence, they talk about natural law. Now, when I get into this, people's eyes might roll over. I wish they wouldn't. Because if you remember anything, remember this one thing. Natural law goes to the heart of America's founding and to the heart of humanity. What's natural law? It's a universal understanding of truth.
Hang on, Mark. I don't want to stop your flow here. I want you to keep going, but I want to pick it up at the natural law point, this progressivism, this administrative state tyranny. I also want to bring it into some of, I'll tell you what I consider, apply what you're writing in this book to, I think, perhaps the greatest constitutional crisis this country has ever faced, and that's now this fourth branch of government, what we call the deep state. I also want to get your take on the Supreme Court decision today, which was a huge win for the president. 800-941-SEAN is our toll-free number. You want to be a part of the program. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. News roundup, information overload, your call in the next hour as well. Straight ahead. All right, 25 till the top of the hour. Toll-free our numbers, 800-941-SEAN. You want to be a part of this extravaganza. The great one, Mark Levin. His brand-new book is now out today. It's called Rediscovering Americanism and the Tyranny of Progressivism. It's really part of a long-standing series of trying to update, educate the American people on the long-forgotten history of our founders and our framers in the formation of this country and constitutional republic that we are, and a great reminder of how important principles are, guiding principles are, to keeping America safe and free. And he's really the only one in the country that has the passion and the ability to put all of this together in a way that we can, you know, learn, absorb, and understand. And, you know, if you look at all the battles we're fighting today, Mark, I'm arguing that your book is quite applicable to the current circumstances. We have a duly elected president. We have selective leaking by a group of people that are abusing the power we have given them to protect us, and that being intelligence gathering and that means surveillance and unmasking and leaking and violating crimes. And we have a two-tier justice system where Hillary Rodham Clinton commits known felonies and she gets off the hook. And Loretta Lynch clearly obstructing justice and she seems to get off the hook. We'll see what happens with the investigation. We have, in my opinion, we have more corruption and collusion and frankly, more of a standard with a special counsel that keeps going into investigative creep, starts out at one place and God only knows where he's going to finish up. We're at step three already because he couldn't find evidence of Trump-Russia collusion. And my question to you is this what I think the greatest constitutional crisis facing our country, and that is a fourth branch of government, not the courts, but unelected, unaccountable bureaucrats that we don't even know who they are, leaking information, leaking intelligence?
It's certainly one of them, but it's probably the most complicated because it's happening from within. You know, it's not a civil war. It's not a war of any kind. And, you know, Jefferson and Joseph Story and Lincoln and Reagan, they all said if this nation is going to be conquered, it will be conquered from within. And that's what's happening, and in many respects, that's what's already happened. Here's the thing. You call this the deep state. This is the force of progressivism. It is ubiquitous. It's in the courts. It's in the bureaucracy, this massive fourth branch of government. You even hear it among Republicans when they talk about, oh, we're going to repeal and replace. No, they're not. It is now in the psychology and the mindset of our politicians and our bureaucrats and our media, which is what I'm trying to address and undo and unravel step by step. And it's the conquering of virtue. You see, if you don't have virtuous leaders, if you don't have a virtuous court or virtuous judge or virtuous congressman, then anything goes. The rule of law goes. The Constitution doesn't matter. You can lie about all the people who are going to die if the Republican plan is promoted. You can lie about the cuts to Medicare because virtue doesn't matter. There is no eternal truth. None of it matters anymore. All that matters is advancing your ideology by hook or by crook. That's where we are today.
Mark, can I put a little bit of a highlight on it? And I say it a little differently than you. When you talk about virtue, when you talk about principle, and you talk about an honorable people, you know, it's the very thing that Thomas Paine warned in Common Sense. He said, were the guides and dictates of individuals' conscience, you know, irresistibly obeyed, there would be no need for government. There'd be no need for the formation of government. We would govern ourselves. And then he goes on to describe the great pamphleteer, the need for government is based on human lack of virtue, lack of principles, lack of adherence to truth.
That's right. But the only form of government, ultimately, the only form of government that comports with or is consistent with individualism and liberty, unalienable rights, it's not pure democracy. The framers rejected that. It's not pure populism, pure democracy, because people don't get to vote on your unalienable rights. They're unalienable. So they would consider that mobocracy. Centralized government, monarchy, fascism, or government by bureaucracy. They feared that the most, which is why they created separation of powers. But what I'm trying to get across is we have this massive battle of forces going on right now where there are very few people in our government, Republican or not, who even recognize this. To them, it's a Republican-Democrat fight, or it's a fight on this or that issue. The reason why they're out to get Donald Trump isn't because Donald Trump is this powerful supporter of the principles in the Declaration. It's because he's not a powerful supporter of their position.
Mm-hmm.
That is, he's done a lot of good things.
Isn't he a threat to him? Isn't he a threat to the swamp?
Yes, no. Because they thought they had this thing signed, sealed, and delivered. They had Obama for 8 years. They were going to put Hillary in there, and they thought there was no turning back. And there may be no turning back. But on a number of issues, Trump has fought them. Now, he's not fighting them from an intellectual perspective, and that doesn't matter. We need to understand this. But he's fighting them because he knows that all these regulations kill, all these taxes, you know, kill business and so forth. He knows it's wrong to have open
borders. He's fighting them from a common sense.
From a common sense perspective. But he's not allowed to, you see, because they're supposed to run everything. Because they're ideologues. They have as much tolerance for differences of opinion than the Marxists do, than any centralized state does. They have no tolerance for differences of opinion. And if you disagree with them, they claim that you're a denier. They don't want to engage in debate, as I explained this throughout the book. But even more than that, we need to get right with our principles. We're not purists. You know, supporting the Constitution and the Declaration, these notions of unalienable rights and so forth, goes back before Aristotle.
Can I ask you this question?
Yes,
as I look through, and I spent a lot of time this weekend doing a deep dive into your book, and I really just want you to express it because nobody does it as well as you. But as I read chapters on the progressive masterminds, the philosopher kings, the administrative state tyranny, liberty and republicanism, that really popped out at me, and liberty and property. As I go through all of this, what I see is there is a common theme. there have been, and the philosophers that were, that so inspired our framers and founders, they were, you know, those people inspired them, but they also knew that this great experiment had been tried in various forms over the centuries. And over the centuries, in one shape, matter, or form, they all fail. And they all fail basically for the same reasons. Not only virtue and truth that you discussed earlier, but people fundamentally, they leave these principles behind, and the desire for power and money and greed of those in power literally takes us away from what got us here.
You're right. And what really drew my attention and started me to think about this book and what I was going to write was a letter I found from Thomas Jefferson to John Adams, and it's in the book. Thomas Jefferson looks at Roman history, looks at Caesar, you know, the great men of Rome, Cicero and Brutus and Cato and so forth, and he says to John Adams, you know, this is a remarkable country, America, where the people have virtue. He said, when I look back on Rome, we couldn't have fixed it. Cicero couldn't fix it, Brutus couldn't fix it, Cato couldn't fix it, and he said, and the reason is simple. The people lost their virtue. They didn't care anymore. They wanted things. They wanted pleasure. They wanted pure happiness. They wanted all these things. And so they gave up on the republic. And so this is what I'm trying to explain to people. You ignore the academics, you ignore the intellectuals at your own peril because they control the politics. Say what you will. It's their ideas that are put in place. And it is their... Let me give you an example. Private property and capitalism. It's under brutal attack all the time. What is private property? Private property is what an individual creates with their own minds, with their own hands, on the finite time that they have on Earth. You create private property, whatever that property is. And for somebody to come in and say, you didn't earn it, you have too much of it, you don't deserve it, and I'm going to give it to somebody else, that's fascism. That's fascism. And it's an attack on the individual, it's an attack on our economic system. Why? Because some politician getting votes thinks you have too much or you have too little or something of that sort. But even more, it attacks your humanity. And I also have in here James Madison. He talks about property. You know what he says about property rights, Sean? He says property rights is more than about physical property. You have a property right in your opinion. You have a property right in your life. You have a property right in your associations. In other words, they all stem from the same thing, the value of the human being, the value of the individual. When is the last time Bernie Sanders talked about individual liberty? He never does. When is the first time Bernie Sanders talked about the Declaration of Independence? He never does. He rejects it all, as do the others, because they have to. In order to have an all-powerful centralized government that gets in your face, you must reject the American founding. And what I'm trying to do here, look, this book isn't going to change the world, but if it changes the minds or opens the eyes of 100 people, 1,000 people, 10,000 people, that's a good thing. That's a good thing.
You know, I've told you this personally, and I'm almost hesitant to say it all on the air. There's going to come a time, and I would rather it be sooner than later, than I think that people are going to look at these books. Because really what you've done, and I'm not trying to simplify it, because...
You're saying I have to die so the books...
No, you're such a wise ass. You know that? No, what I'm saying is what you have done is you've done all the work. And you have summarized all of these great philosophers, all of those that inspired our framers, founders, that all that really went into intellectually, philosophically, the foundation of the country. That's what you've done. And then you put it all together, and then you also point out how we have gone awry, how we have gone wrong. And in that sense, you've created a roadmap. And I just worry that we're not going to read the map until it's too late, if that analogy makes sense to you.
Let me tell you the other thing.
Am I right about that?
I think you are. But I also want the reader to know about the philosophers who are behind Bernie Sanders.
Well, hang on one second. Yep. I don't mean to cut you.
Yep.
I hate interrupting your flow, but I have to. I have to pay bills. You're a host. You understand. Mark Levin, the great one with us. His brand new book is just out today. It's in bookstores everywhere. Hannity.com, Amazon.com, Rediscovering Americanism and the Tyranny of Progressivism. He'll be on Hannity tonight, 10 Eastern. on the Fox News Channel, also Jay Sekulow and Newt Gingrich. And I have two monologues tonight that I think are two of the most important I've ever put together, in my humble opinion. So that's coming up to 10 o'clock tonight. And as we continue, final moments with the great one, Mark Levin, 800-941-SHAWN. You want to be a part of the program. We're going to have our news roundup, information overload at the top of the hour, and all the other news, including the Supreme Court allowing Trump's travel ban to take effect, a big win on his side. We'll get to that. And also the very latest on the deep state. And, yeah, apparently Obama knew all about Russia the whole time. And everything's now boomeranging back on the Democrats because they could not let it go for 11 months. Naturally, I predicted this would happen, and now here we are. And I'll explain that. Mark's book, Rediscovering Americanism and the Tyranny of Progressivism. You know, for those, we don't have a lot of time left, and I really urge this audience, and I know my audience will eat this up, and I know a lot of our fans, you know, we kind of, people listen to your show, listen to my show, and what you're doing is such a great service here. And I honestly think, Mark, at the end of the day, we're in the fight of our life in terms of saving the country. To me, this is the tipping point. This is it. Mm-hmm. We either get this straight now or, you know what, it's over. And all the blood and all the sacrifice and all the sweat and tears, for what? If yep. we don't preserve, protect, and defend that which was given us. I'm arguing there's a clear and present danger against this country right now.
No, I agree. Look, there's some things we can do, but it's all very daunting, isn't it?
Very.
You know, where we think the president is right, and I've been very, very pleased with a lot of his positions. You know, I supported
trying to destroy this man, Mark.
Oh, hey, listen, this is a fight over the republic at this point. Whether people agree with Trump on everything or not is irrelevant. This is a fight over republicanism, pure and simple. And there is a goal here to criminalize politics, and I've talked about it on your show, on my own show. There's a goal here to impeach him. Why? Because they don't agree with the election. They don't agree with the result. This is an attack on our Republican system in the last election, pure and simple. And the number of leaks that are occurring here is absolutely beyond belief. And to some extent, you know, it's because they haven't fired the Obama holdovers and they haven't cleaned out some of the bureaucracy. But on the other hand, some of it is not controllable. And it's an enormous attempt to turn this republic on its head. And why? Because, again, we're up against this force of progressivism. And what I want people to do, really, if they get Rediscovering Americanism, I want you to look at the philosophers. And I try and break it down as easily as I can, who stand behind the modern-day left. They are repugnant. These are individuals who attack liberty, who attack individualism. They have phony ideas of nirvana and so forth. Sean, I just want to thank you for all you do and for being such a great friend, and I want to thank your audience. I hope they'll take a look at it.
The book is phenomenal. I love reading your books. I always learn from them. Thank you, sir. News roundup, information overload, next.
Why don't you think you should step aside?
Let me tell you why I should stay instead. Because I'm a master legislator. I'm experienced in terms of knowing the institutional memory of the Congress. If Hillary Clinton had won, I might have gone home. But with Donald Trump in the White House, with a Republican majority in both houses, no way.
This Donald Trump is the worst person ever, and he's a Republican, and he's president, and yet since he's been president, there's been four special elections. Democrats 0-4 in the Trump era. Democrats are so lame. The Russians are like, we were going to hack this election, but why bother? Sergey, take day off. We don't even need. And the real bad news this week is the Senate unveiled their super secret health care bill. And you know, everybody's saying it was unveiled. Unveiled is not the right term. You unveil a sculpture. Nobody goes, behold a turd. This is more like something that was excreted. I mean, health care bill, more like a manifesto from the Zodiac Killer. They should have published this by cutting out letters from the newspaper. It phases out Medicaid, the safety net for our oldest, poorest, and most vulnerable citizens. It lets states drop the Obamacare protections like pre-existing conditions. And just for spite, it defunds Planned Parenthood.
No. those who live outside her district that they can't come in. Robin, what does the yellow wristband mean?
The yellow wristband means you are branded.
Oh.
But you cannot go in the building. You are forced to sit outside. Even though we registered.
Look at this. Second class citizens.
We are stakeholders. We are stakeholders in this district.
We're stakeholders in this district.
And this number is expected.
The one that was shot, the Scafey guy. I mean, that guy, what's his name? Chasey?
I really don't want you to deflect right now.
No, this mother, like, his whole job is, like, to get people, convince Republicans to kick people off health care.
We know all of this.
I hate this mother.
Yeah.
Glad he got shot.
So then
I'm not going
to
say that in public.
You don't have
what are you saying it to us
say
for?
Say something.
What are you telling us for?
I wish he was f***ing dead.
Why are you telling us, but I'm not telling anyone else?
I'm trying to f***ing figure
it's out. It's okay, because I've been recording this conversation since you've come in, so I will publicly release it myself.
Jesus Christ, can you bring Trump too? You've misunderstood completely.
Just give him some love and rehabilitation.
I think he needs help. I'm just going to be in the press. It'll be hard. But I'd like to think you're all a part of it. When was the last time an actor assassinated a president?
I mean, he's so blatantly stupid. He's a punk. He's a dog. He's a pig. He's a con, a bullshit artist, a mutt who doesn't know what he's talking about, doesn't do his homework, doesn't care, thinks he's gaming society, doesn't pay his taxes. He's an idiot. Colin Powell said it best. He's a national disaster. He's an embarrassment to this country. It makes me so angry that this country has gotten to this point, that this fool, this bozo, has wound up where he has. He talks how he wants to punch people in the face. Well, I'd like to punch him in the face.
Has it gotten any uglier? Yeah, one assassination attempt after another in terms of Republicans. Alexandria, Virginia, we have assassination Liz. We have one Hollywood star after another talking about their fantasies of blowing up the White House. Or where's John Wilkes Booth when we need him in a way, when he talks about or refers to, when's the last time an actor has killed a president? Not funny. This is all the swamp. This is all the deep state. This is all the anger, frustration. I've never seen anything like it in my lifetime. As a matter of fact, it is the subject of a brand new book by my friend and colleague at the Fox News Channel. He's the host of The Specialist on each weekday at 5 p.m. His brand new book is called The Swamp, Washington's Murky Pool of Corruption, Cronyism, and Really Strange Creatures, and How Trump Can Drain It. And Geraldo Rivera, Eric Bolling, and Geraldo, welcome back, both of you.
Hey, Sean, thanks for having me on. You know, hey, Geraldo. Hey, one of the things I noticed in that soundbite, that montage you put together, was Maxine Waters making sure that Trump supporters weren't allowed into her town hall because she only wanted people from her district in her town hall. But do you know that Maxine Waters doesn't even live in her own district?
I didn't know that about Maxine. I knew the guy in the special election, Georgia 6th. He didn't live in his district. He couldn't even vote for himself. So she can't vote for herself either?
She's outside her own district, but the hypocrisy comes in that she was only allowing people in her district into her town hall. So technically she shouldn't have been allowed into her own town hall.
So she can't vote for herself every election year?
I guess not. Unless, I don't know if there's a way to register in the district.
Well, she could say she lives in the district when she doesn't. I mean, which is part of it. You know, why do you think, Geraldo, you know, staying on Eric's book here for a second, why do you think there is this vitriol, vile hatred? You know, you have suggested, and I agree with you, that if this type of incendiary language continues to be used, and you were with me in Alexandria, Virginia, I really shudder to think at how violent this can get, because the rhetoric is more violent than ever.
I needed a Dramamine after you played that montage. Hi, Eric. Congratulations on the new book.
Thanks, Geraldo.
There is no doubt but that the surprise victory of Donald Trump and his flamboyant nature, his unconventional personality that we know so well and have for the decades, is something that really grinds on the intellectual, the intelligentsia, the core, progressive intelligentsia, at least in their own minds, that are the core of the philosophers of the Democratic Party. I think that given the absolute animosity between the two sides, it is very, very distressing to report and to project that this is going to be our reality for the rest of the Trump presidency.
Yeah, and I mean, I think one of the reasons they're trying so hard to take him out is he is a threat to the swamp. He's a threat to the deep state. He is he's a threat to the entire Democratic apparatus and their power base, because if he can prove deregulation, lower taxes, energy independence, building a wall, fighting for America, putting American jobs first, all works, he likely can transform the body politic for generations to come, Eric.
So that's exactly what he's done, Sean. If you look at, all right, okay, so the stock market making record all-time highs, consumer confidence record all-time highs, unemployment lows, multi-decade lows, consumer confidence, producer confidence, retailers' confidence off the charts. What that is exactly what you said. It's political capital to go ahead and do what he promised to do, to drain the swamp. Investigating for the book, though, spending a lot of time, the swamp is a hell of a lot murkier and deeper than probably he ever expected, certainly I ever expected. Sean, you and I talk, and Geraldo, we talk about the hypocrisy and the stuff that goes on in D.C. and how horrible it is for the average American. He's got a lot of work to do. He's going to need all that political capital he can muster up right now, which is, frankly, working. To your point, reducing regulation is an absolute jet fuel, rocket fuel to the economy.
Oh, I think, yeah, go ahead. Geraldo?
I was just going to add that I think the one point that Eric makes and has to, in reality, the harsh reality is that the swamp has plenty of people from both parties or no parties. I mean, all those lobbyists, they work, for their own bottom line.
Very true.
It's going to be very,
very
difficult for the president to get past it. Now, I just want to say, you list his achievements, and as an investor, I absolutely applaud everything the president's done to restore kind of an equilibrium to the American economy. I think it is very underreported, and he doesn't get nearly enough credit for it. But I think that you cannot overlook what a morass, what an absolute jumble of problems this health care legislation is going to be for this president going forward and for Republican candidates. I only wish, and Sean, you and I have talked privately about this, that he had done something, keeping in mind what Eric reports about the economy, done something like infrastructure, had done something that he could.
Well, that's part of his agenda. I mean, he's only been there, less than 6 months, Geraldo. I mean, you got to give the guy some time.
I do, but, where does health care end up? I mean, do you see a path to success?
Yeah, I see. I'll tell you where it ends up. And it ends up, I think they're going to pass it. I think he's going to sign it. And I think it's a good first start. It's nothing that I would ever want, because I don't even believe the role of government should be. I think it should all be free markets. I think it should be all be cooperatives. We have my buddy from Wichita on at the bottom of the hour, Dr. Josh Umber, and he's got a cooperative where it's $50 a month unlimited care for adults, $10 a month unlimited care for kids. He buys all of his pharmaceuticals direct, and it would cost you 48 cents to get your leg, an x-ray of your leg, Geraldo. That's how he does it.
I want him to be successful. I think that the Supreme Court, the decision today on the refugee ban, was a welcome victory for the president, just as he was saddled with a quote-unquote defeat in the lower court and then the federal appellate courts on the refugee ban. I think that now he has to be credited. Now the Supreme Court has given a green light. Now a refugee ban, I think it is absolutely fair to say a refugee ban from those six countries can be implemented
100%
in a much more orderly way than they.
All right, we'll pick it up there. We'll continue more with Geraldo Rivera, and we'll continue with Eric Bolling, and both from Fox News, both colleagues. Eric's new book is called The Swamp: Washington's murky pool of corruption, cronyism, and really strange creatures, and how Trump can drain it. And by the way, it's on Amazon.com, bookstores now everywhere today, and Hannity.com. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back, and we'll get to your calls as well. And Dr. Josh Umber, my favorite doctor, he's got a brilliant model that the rest of the country ought to follow on health care. And we'll go over some of those examples next. And as we continue with my Fox colleagues, Geraldo Rivera and Eric Bolling is the host of a brand new hit show, which is called The Specialist, 5 p.m. each afternoon. And Eric's new book out today, Amazon.com and Hannity.com and bookstores everywhere. It's called The Swamp, Washington's murky pool of corruption, cronyism, and really strange creatures, and how Trump can drain it. You know, I really worry in his effort to change and get rid of the deep state, to get rid of the corruption, to deregulate, to take power away from the federal government. In the process, he's just pissed off a lot of people, Eric. And as you write in your book, how does he do this successfully? And we see the effort that they have abound to get this guy out of office and remove him and prevent him from fulfilling his promises.
And I think, Sean, you're hitting on the thing that surprised me most when putting together the book, and probably surprised Donald Trump the most when he got to Washington, is the pushback he was getting not only from the Democrats and the left, but getting from his own party, some of the establishment Republicans who didn't want to see him there in the first place, because he does. He threatens status quo in D.C. Now, if you remember all those chants, besides lock her up, lock her up, lock her up, the other chant was drain the swamp. And what that was reduce the size of government, reduce the inefficiencies of government, the waste, the fraud and abuse of government, and do it in the way that a businessman would. What that means is there are people on both sides of the aisle who are going to be escorted out of the swamp, drained right out of the swamp. And I think we see, listen, I hate to say this and I hate to do this, but, you know, John McCain, his daughter, Meghan McCain's a colleague of ours, and I love her dearly, but her father, now we find out, had been at least taking some money from George Soros for some of his projects. If that doesn't define the swamp more than anything, I don't know what does.
Well, Geraldo?
I just think that if what Eric is describing and reporting is accurate, and I have no reason to doubt him, that is very, very distressing. If your heroes are so tarnished, then it's very difficult to be enthusiastic about government. I would only add this. The president is encountering fierce headwinds and really damaging leaks, not just from elected officials or people, but from that. The deep state that you described can accurately be used to apply to aspects of the CIA and the FBI. And I really do maintain that other than careerists in and around the White House staff, I think the CIA and the FBI have been guilty of really damaging leaks about this president. It's almost like he cannot get a secret.
That's the fourth branch of government, Geraldo.
In the Washington Post the next day.
I'm telling you, it is the fourth branch of government. In other words, unelected, unaccountable branch of government, selective leaks to destroy the president. It's that simple, and it's happening. That's the deep state.
But I just imagine if everyone listening today, just think of your own life. I mean, we lead basically law-abiding lives, some more complicated.
Well, some of us do. I mean, I'm worried about you at times, but.
But if all if every secret you ever had was leaked as soon as you got it, I mean, it would be very, very difficult to just keep your life together, your job, your marriage, your association with your neighbors, your friends, your kids' friends. You know, if no one had any secrets that they could rely on, it'd be some world.
Yeah. All right, Eric, you can get your book, bookstores everywhere, Amazon.com, Hannity.com. Geraldo, thank you. Quick break, right back. We'll continue.
Kellyanne Conway right there. She says the Democrats ought to come to the table, help pass this thing.
Well, on January 4th, they passed this reconciliation bill, which said we don't want Democrats. We have sent them 10 letters saying, sit down with us. We can improve Obamacare. If you stop doing this repeal, which is Trump care, highly unpopular with the American people, we'll sit down with you and make it better. Even last week, I asked Mitch McConnell, let Democrats and Republicans together, all 100 of us, meet in the old Senate chamber and discuss this. No.
You think
they
want to
try it themselves first. If they fail, hopefully they'll come sit down. They'll stop sabotaging Obamacare and sit down with us and we'll make Obamacare better.
Are they going to pass this bill?
I think it's 50-50. First, Democrats, we are doing everything we can to fight this bill because it's so devastating for the middle class. I think they have at best, a 50-50 chance of passing this bill. To get three senators to vote no, you can probably, you can say yes, you can say no. It's probably 50-50.
And how did we all learn about this truth? In President Trump's letter removing Mr. Comey from office. At first, most didn't believe it. The media scoffed when they wrote what the president said in that letter. They insisted that Mr. Comey would never tell the president he was not under investigation. Well, we learned earlier this month from Mr. Comey himself that he had done exactly that. It wasn't a surprise to me because Mr. Comey had told me the same thing. I have to note something else here. Mr. Comey didn't just tell the president, Senator Feinstein, and me that the president was not under investigation. He had also told the Gang of Eight. Of course, the Gang of Eight includes Senate Minority Leader Senator Schumer. But even after Mr. Comey told the Gang of Eight that the president was not under investigation, the Minority Leader told the media that the president was under investigation. And of course, that further helped feed media hysteria. The majority leader even tried to say, or the minority leader even tried to say that the Senate shouldn't vote on the Supreme Court nomination because the president was under investigation. And the whole time, he knew it wasn't true. So media hysteria and baseless political attacks filled the vacuum left by Mr. Comey's failure to inform the public, to be transparent, to be accountable.
All right, 800-941-SEAN, if you want to be a part of the program. That was Senator Chuck Grassley of the great state of Iowa. One of the things we're watching in the Senate is particularly this week leading into the 4th of July and maybe beyond. Now, you've got the Senate version of a health care bill. Over the weekend, the number of those against went as high as 7. I think it's now down to 5, but it hovers around that area at any given time. And in order for a bill to pass, it can only have 2 Republicans saying no to whatever the legislation is. Remember, when it passed in the House, it was, what, by 1 vote? And it took a lot of arm twisting and, frankly, a lot of heavy lifting, not by the leadership, but by the Freedom Caucus members who were working and coordinating with the Senate and people like Cruz and Lee and Rand Paul and a few others to try and get this thing over the hump. Now, the consensus of those that have been opposing is that, well, this is a bit of a rush job, but it doesn't face one reality, and that is we learn that there's over 100 Republican House members and, frankly, a number of Republican senators that even though they had a lot of show votes to repeal and replace Obamacare, they never had any intention of ever doing it. Now, also, the problem is that they've got as much as, what, 5.5 weeks recess coming up between the 4th of July and heading into the August recess. And I think it's really pathetic that these guys keep going on vacation and they haven't even begun the issue of the budget and on the economy and on repatriation and lower tax rates and reforming the tax code. And they haven't fully, completely, to my satisfaction, satisfied the building of the border wall. And everything else in between. Very frustrating. Now, there are great, at the end of the day, as imperfect as this is going to be, it's not going to be anything but a good start. And I had the Health and Human Services Secretary on TV the other day, and I said, all right, but you do have discretionary powers under the current bill that you would be able to make dramatic changes that paves the way for real solutions. Now, what is the real solution of healthcare? It's very simple to me. It's free market competition. It's healthcare savings accounts, and it's also healthcare cooperatives. Now, the guy that probably hates me more in the world because I mention him so much is the guy that I think has come up with a model that ought to be duplicated in every small town and city in the country. I'm not sure specifically if it could work in a place like New York City, but if you look at what Dr. Umber, founder of AtlasMD, and Dr. Doug Nunnemaker, who's the chief medical officer at AtlasMD and the co-founder of AtlasMD, they're both with us today. What they've been able to do is pretty much unprecedented. And that is for unlimited care, it costs you $50 a month per adult, $10 a month per child. And it includes just about everything you're ever going to need. And it includes, if you need a prescription for high blood pressure or if you have cholesterol issues, you're going to have your checkup and you're going to walk out with your prescription because these guys have already negotiated, what, 95% reductions in what you'd pay at a pharmacy for the medicines that you need. And it's pretty remarkable what they've been able to do. And short of cancer or heart attack or a bad accident, this is your coverage and 95% of what you're going to need in your life. And I view it as concierge coverage for everybody, not just rich people in the country. This is how rich people, by the way, get their medical care. They pay huge sums of money to doctors, and if they need the doctor to come over at 3 a.m. because they have the sniffles, the doctor's going to come over. Just the way it works. If you have a lot of money and doctors are in business too, they've got to keep their lights on. They'll take care of certain patients that way because that's what they do. Am I right about that, Dr. Rumber?
Well, you're right about everything. Absolutely.
I'm right about everything. Wait a minute. Linda, did you hear that? I am right about everything.
So this is a solution to health care that now that only the rich used to have, but is with innovation come down to a level that's affordable for everybody. And there's a great quote, the future is here, it's just not evenly distributed. And I think that's the problem we're running into with Congress is 99% of them, I think, still live in a world where they don't know about direct care, despite how often you talk about it, and we love you for it, and the movement is thriving because of it. And just last week, we had over 300 docs in D.C. doing the direct care model, talking to their senators and meeting with
And you've been to D.C., right, Dr. Umber?
Several times.
How did you get to D.C., and tell us the circumstances, how you got there and who you talked to?
Well, in May, we were invited to a closed-door meeting with Tom Price to discuss medication prices, and it was the sixth of six panels that they had, so it was us and a bunch of pharmacy industry executives.
By the way, I hope you were invited because I'm so annoying that I keep pushing your name on radio and TV and telling everybody in D.C. to call you.
I think finally they're saying, well, we got to hear what this is about. So when we introduced ourselves as family physicians that sell medicines for a penny a pill, boy, did we get a cold shoulder from the rest of the room. But it's that is the way that innovation works, is it may not be comfortable for the other pharmacy executives there, but they will embrace it as they learn more about it. And I believe Tom Price did when he was looking for, quote, a solution to take to Trump to lower healthcare costs, specifically medication costs, but as you say all the time, our direct care model, unlimited visits, no co-pays, any procedure we do is free, medications and
like if I need stitches, you're gonna give me free stitches, right?
Had a lady fall off a motorcycle Saturday at 10 o'clock. I met her at the office at 10:45, six stitches, and 15 minutes later, she was back on the road.
And she didn't pay a penny.
Nope. It cost me $1 to do that procedure. I will absorb that as the cost of doing business to have her as a patient. And that is the type of health care everyone should get. And she's not a well-to-do. She's a regular blue-collar.
She's the heart and soul of the country. She's one of the people that make our country great. And you really care about these people. I mean, even if somebody doesn't have the $50, why do I know you'd take care of them anyway?
Well, because we're doctors. And we care about people, and we want to get them good care first. And you know, that we took an oath, do no harm. And to me, that means do no financial harm either.
How has your business grown? Let's talk about that part. You're in Wichita, Kansas. I mean, can you even take on any more patients?
We're adding 100 patients a month, but we have five doctors, and we're looking for more physicians. But I helped 24 doctors start a direct care model in May alone, and every month we're helping more doctors do that. So,
and how many other people have copied this model? And by the way, I don't mean to be dismissive of Dr. Nunnemaker, who's your colleague and one of the founders. How are you,
co-founder,
sir?
Co-founder, absolutely.
Yeah, I'm doing well. Thanks for asking, Sean.
So do you find me as annoying as Dr. Umber, or because I only call him and don't mention your name, you feel better about it?
No, it doesn't bother me whatsoever.
Well, I appreciate what you do. How many places around the country have tried to duplicate what you're doing in Wichita?
Well, that's something that we've actually been actively going after for, you know, going on several years now, helping doctors that don't know about this start up their own clinics, and it's surprisingly easy given what we're trying to accomplish without insurance. You take that out and it's pretty easy, but several hundred clinics throughout the country, and as Dr. Josh said, it grows month to month. Every month is better than the last.
Yeah. And since, like, is it help that we've mentioned that, not but we're patting ourselves on the back. In other words, when people hear about it, they like the idea. They're like, $50 a month, unlimited care, I can go for that, right?
Oh, people need to hear about it. This is, I think, the biggest way that we can grow is that transferable trust. Is you've evaluated, you've seen it, you've run the numbers, you see that this is better than...
Listen, truth be told, I called you once and I said, I can't breathe because I got this allergy, and you sent me medicine and fixed me in like 2 days.
I think actually Lauren was mad at you because you weren't going to the doctor, and she made you call me. But either way, you called. And so,
well, the truth be told, I gave Linda my symptoms, and I said, because they've heard me hacking for 5 weeks in a row, and they said, stop it. We can't take it anymore. And then 2 days later, I was cured, and I'm like, wow, that guy's really good.
That's the care everybody deserves. And now it's the affordable side. That's what Congress hasn't learned is we keep talking about health insurance, but health insurance only pays for health care. Well, if we can make the cost of health care 95% less, it answers most of the insurance questions. And we have the support of patients, physicians, employers. Even the insurance companies are benefiting from this. And if you ask me, I think that the left, as it would love the direct care model because there's not enough money in the state in most states to double the Medicaid budget.
All right, when we come back, I want to continue with this. And Dr. Josh Umber and Dr. Doug Nunnemaker, they're both the founders, co-founders of Atlas MD, and here talking about medical cooperatives and $50 a month an adult, $10 a month a child, unlimited care. Drugs are almost free because you get 95-98% discounts, and you get right out of the doctor's office. And, yeah, I'm sure the pharmaceutical companies are pissed off, but too bad. Why should you be paying that kind of premium? It's insane. Right, as we continue our final moments with Dr. Josh Umber, one of the founders of Atlas MD, is his co-founder, Dr. Doug Nunnemaker, is with us. Maybe we ought to make Doug a household name instead of you, Dr. Umber. So you were called to D.C. 6 times now, once with Dr. Price. Tell us about the other meetings and what did you accomplish?
Well, we've been to, we talked to Dr. Price. We've also set up phone calls with the staff of Dr. Johnson, Dr. Lee, Senator Lee, Senator Johnson, Senator Paul, and then we've got a meeting scheduled with Senator Cruz's healthcare advisors. So that should be this Wednesday. A lot of it was supposed to be the Thursday after the shooting, and then, of course, shooting threw that off. But I think you have that core group there who says we don't like necessarily what did pass on the Senate bill. They see that there's a lot of other options out there like this. The more they hear about it, the more they love it. Patients getting $1,000 worth of care for $100, that is the 10x improvement that we need in health care. So each time we talk to them, they're almost blown away. The too good to be true, so simple it's confusing idea.
You know, if most people like me, with all due respect, Dr. Umber, I don't really want to waste my time going to the doctor.
Sure.
And so the people that know that you're there and available 24/7 and it's part of their $50 a month fee to them, and just knowing you're there. Now, you're going to have a few hypochondriacs, I assume, but I'm sure that that's a very small minority. And you go, yes, Mrs. Smith, your blood pressure is fine today, Mrs. Smith. See you next week, Mrs. Smith. But
yeah, a very doable model.
Thank you very much. And we keep repeating this because maybe as long as at the end of this we can pave the way for these cooperatives and health savings accounts, we all win. You know, even catastrophic care is illegal under Obamacare. That's got to change because that's what a lot of young people need. All right, that's all the time we have left for today. Let Not Your Heart Be Troubled. Hannity, important monologue tonight. Newt Gingrich, the great one. Mark Levin, Jay Sekulow, all coming up tonight, 10 Eastern. Fox, back here tomorrow.